All right, we're beginning here on the bottom of Kuf Zayin Amud Bet by the Mishnah. Mishalach the Medina Tayam, someone who went overseas, was traveling. And this nice gentleman took upon himself to take care of his wife. She had nothing left behind, so he went ahead and took care of her. Chanan Omer, Ibeid et Ma'utav. This guy lost his money. Nobody asked him to help out this woman. Nobody asked him to supply this woman, provide her mizonot. Nechloku alav b'nei kohanim gedolim. Barmo'u ishava kama hotzi v'ito. Should take a shavua about how much he expended on the woman, and that he'll get reimbursed by the husband who is obligated in the mizonot. Amar Rabbi Dosa ben Hyrcanus, kedivreihem, like the b'nei kohanim gedolim, makes sense. Amar Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, yafeh amar Chanan, Hiniach ma'utav al keren hatzvi. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says Hanan's statement makes a lot of sense. It's as if he put his money on the antlers of a deer who's going to take flight, and you're not going to see this money anymore. He put out his money without any expectation that he's going to see it back again. Now, obviously, it's not simple here because the husband is obligated in supporting his wife. And therefore, someone else stepped in and took over his obligation to support his wife, ben kach, he had to pay the money. So then why shouldn't he have to reimburse this individual who put up the money and supported his wife in the interim? Right, so Tosafot suggests there was another plan by the husband, which was that his wife would be dochek. His wife would scrape together her means, and she would have to be a little bit more mitzumtzam, spend a little less, live a little less luxuriously. And she could have gotten by with much less. But now that this guy opened up his wallet and provided for her, then all of a sudden the husband now says, I'm obligated in all this money, which I wouldn't have had to had she just gotten by with what she had. So therefore, he claims that he wasn't obligated, that she could have made it by without him between her Maisa Yadayim and her scrimping a little bit, and she would have made it through this period. But now that this guy gave her all this money, so she lived like she normally did, and she spent more than she might have done otherwise. And therefore he says, I don't owe you anything because I wasn't obligated to supply this to my wife. So here's the machloket about whether when you are engaged in doing something for someone else and benefiting them in that manner, does that person have to reimburse you? The B'nai Kohanim and Gedolim say yes. And Hanan says no, because nobody asked you to do it. You were never appointed as an agent. You were never assigned responsibility for this. The fact that you did it, right, is chesed, it's tzedakah, but you should have no expectation of getting reimbursed, and you have no claim to get reimbursed for. Now, we're going to discuss this. You can obviously see there's a very large Tosafot over here that discusses whether this has application beyond the case that we're speaking over here. Rashi and many of the Rishonim view this as no different than someone who is reimbursing a loan for someone else. Someone took out a loan. He was a debtor. The nice guy down the block saw that he was under pressure, went ahead and repaid the loan for him. He covered the loan for him so that he wouldn't be under pressure anymore. Question is, does he have an obligation now to repay that loan? Does he have an obligation to reimburse him for the fact that he just saved him from his creditor? Can you extend this case to that case of chov? Rashi says, yeah, the cases are comparable. This has broad application, and that any time you take care of someone without being asked for it, and we'll have to see there are some parameters to this, where it's not just anything goes, but within certain parameters, he will not be obligated to repay you in these instances. On the other hand, Tosafot brings down other cases, and then starts to differentiate or explain the shita of the Rabbeinu Tam, who distinguishes and says that this case is a unique case. So first of all, he brings the case if someone descends into another person's field and improves the field. Goes ahead, he takes care of the field for them, he plants it, he puts fertilizer down, does all this great stuff for them. We know this from the Gemara, we actually saw this recently, is that he pays them the lower of the hotza'ot, or the shevach, or the benefit that he provided to him. So over there you see that there is reimbursement for shevach, for benefit. If you provide a benefit to someone else, then you're responsible, or the party that received the benefit has a responsibility to reimburse that individual for the benefit that they got. Even though they never asked them to do it, even though they were not acting as an agent for them, but nevertheless, they're a beneficiary. And being a beneficiary, they have to pay for that benefit because they can now sell that, utilize that benefit. And because they can utilize it, they got to pay for that benefit. So now, as Rashi explains over there, Aval Hocha versus our case over here, how is our case here different than the case over there of Shevach? So he says, Tosafot says, Aval Hocha, lo ishbiach lo shum Shevach nechasim. Here, he did not improve any asset for him. Ela shitilo mikviat bal chovo. He just saved him from the collection rights or the creditor. Velo mide yahavle. He gave him nothing. Vehave kemevriach ari minichse chaveiro. It's as if you're chasing away a lion from your friend's property. Davagav demehane oto lo mitchayev mide. But even though he's benefiting you, you do not owe him anything. So here, Tosafot makes an important distinction between hana'ah that is provided that gives you a tangible outcome. Tangible outcome means that you have a improvement that you can touch, feel, see, and understand, take to the bank, right? That is something that you would have to reimburse for. There is hana'ah, there is benefit that is not associated with a particular asset, but something where you protect the individual, where you save them. For instance, a lion comes to eat the sheep in his herd, and you chase away the lion. Over there, he still has the same sheep that he had before. There's nothing new. Now, you did save him. The lion didn't eat the sheep, but not that he added something to his asset base. Over there, you have no right of claim. And that's the same thing over here. By the sheep, and the same thing with the repayment of the loan, he didn't create for him anything new. He just was misaleh. He removed a mazik, something that would have hurt him or something would have impinged on his assets, but he didn't do something to improve his assets. In that case, you do not owe the money. Now, there is here no obligation to repay. That doesn't mean that there wasn't a benefit that he got, and maybe morally he should pay back this individual, but the individual cannot extract it from him in court. He cannot go into court and say, I want my money back. The court will say, we can't enforce this. You were never appointed as an agent, you were never asked to do this, and therefore, you can't demand payment. If the other guy makes payment, then that's a different story, and it would probably be appropriate to make payment. But Rashi does say over here, the fact that he does not owe the payment, and he doesn't obligate it to make the payment, then any type of forgiveness or anything associated with that type of payment is not considered to be hana'ah to the individual. Because since there's no obligation, then even if you waive the loan, in a sense, or the waive the repayment of the loan, that's also not hana'ah, because if somebody else paid for it, it also wouldn't be hana'ah. So if you have no obligation to repay it, or you can't go to court and enforce it, then in that sense, we deem it not to be real hana'ah. Now, whether there's a moral obligation, whether you should pay it back, that might be very true. But it's not an enforceable obligation. Yes, if she had gone to Beit Din, it might have worked differently. The fact that this guy just stepped in and did it changed the dynamic. All right now, Tosafot says, "Lufi mashu perish Rabbeinu Tam, the davka b'mfarneset ishto kamar Chanan, v'ishicholah litzamtzeim, v'litparnes v'dochak." What we said before, the Rabbeinu Tam says that this all applies just to this unique situation in which the individual steps in to support the woman, because we said before, she could have made it through. She could have scraped together things, she could have scrimped a little bit, and she would have been fine. Aval shar poreo lo chovo lo. But any other repayment of a debt for an individual, over there, Chanan would not agree and say you are obligated. And v'omer Rabbi, ki min adin haya vadai patur kidemash mahachi. And then Tosafot says that Rabbi, I don't know if that's the Rosh Mishan, so the Re over here, says that for sure, even by a regular obligation or chov or debt, the same din would be true. Ella, tachanat chachamim hatam, shishamu lo kedei sheyashiv eveleto shel chavero, beroim amaklot, beschar dechozer, menotel schar mi balabait, kedei sheyasok lavriach et ari. Here, Tosafot brings cases by where people have to reimburse for things that seemingly are mavriach min ari, or benefits that he provides. Someone returns an aveda to someone. So there, the chachamim say you have to pay for it. Also in a case where the individual who is a shomer chinam, or a shomer sachar, that he has to protect the herd. So there the Gemara says, if he's a shomer chinam, he has to protect the herd, bichinam, whatever he could do without payment, shomer sachar. But here in a case where he's being attacked by lions, and he has to bring in reinforcements, maybe out of his pocket because he's getting paid to do this. So if he hires people under him to work with him, then that's his issue. But there, the Gemara seems to imply that if a Shomer Chinam hired people, he could go back to the person and ask for money. But why? Again, it's Mavriach Harim and Nechasav. Literally, that's what the case is. And yet you still reimburse him. So from that, Rabbeinu Tam concludes that Hanan's position is only by the case of Isha Mizonot because of this unique circumstance or situation in which he can make a claim that she could have gotten by without it. Over there, they would have lost everything. And therefore, the Rabbeinu Tam bifurcates the din and says, this is true by Mizonot, not true by regular debts. And then Tosafot says, that's not the case. The reimbursement in those other cases are not obligations. The reimbursements are takanat chachamim in order to facilitate a certain behavior. We want people to return a vedot in the future. So how do we encourage them to do that? We have the person reimburse them for their schar batala. We have them reimburse them for whatever expenditures they went through. Otherwise, in the future, the guy's going to walk away from the aveda and say, it's just not worth it to me. Or the case of the Shomer Chinam, the same thing. The Shomer Chinam says, I only have to do it for free. If I hire someone, I don't have to do it. So listen, the lions are going to eat the whole herd. I can't protect it. I'm not going to do anything. Meantime, the whole guy's herd is going to be gone. And the Shomer Chinam discharged his obligation. We want the Shomer Chinam to act differently. We want it to protect the herd, even if it costs money, because overall, it'll cost the guy less if he actually expends the money than if he loses his whole herd here. So what do you have to say? We force him to pay in those cases. So what the Tosafot says is that all of those payments over there are not payments of obligation. They are payments based on takanot chachamim to encourage or facilitate certain behavior. And don't bring a proof from those that Mavriach Ari is obligated to pay when you're in those situations, unlike over here. But rather the din is the same. It is a din that applies everywhere. It's just in certain cases the chachamim intervened in order to take care of these individuals. Now, what about the case where he repays the debt? How come the Chachamim didn't intervene over there? That's because, why do they have to do that? They don't have to encourage people to pay other people's debts. That's not something that we need to facilitate in other cases. So therefore, the Chachamim didn't intervene in that case and put a takana in place that you have to reimburse him. But in cases where we wanted to encourage certain behavior, they did intervene in order to help out or facilitate behavior in the future. That's what Tosfot says. Avo Perea Chovo. What type of takana? Why do you need any improvement? What do you need to facilitate this behavior over and over again? The other individual is not obligated to support this guy's life. The other individual is not obligated to pay out the creditors in this case. And there's no reason why they should act on their own volition to do this. Elaim Kane, they don't expect to get paid back. And that's the only way that they have to. They're acting mitzara chesed, mitzara tztaka, fine. But then you can't insist that the other person pays you back. But we're not going to try to encourage this behavior. There's no reason to encourage this behavior. And then Tosafot brings Rabbeinu Gershon, Perish B'Tshuvot Tav, Kamo Kain, Ta'af Agav, Delo Abi Elikim, Avriach Ari Ba'ama, Yesh Lalu L'Shalem Mide, Ta'ava Akadam, Biroim Ha'maklot, Peskar, V'Gavi Meshiv Evida, Dimlo Kain, Ein Lecha Adam Matzil Shechevayo, Miyad Obdei Kochavim, V'Lo Keperish HaKunchish, Sheperish B'Gitin, Shemafzil Lo B'Chinam. Alright, so there, it brings proof to the fact that Rabbeinu Gershon also agrees that these paybacks here are all takanot chachamim to facilitate certain behavior, and that's why they are considered to be obligations, even though it's maviyah chamirim and achasav. But the Tosafot comes to the conclusion that this has broad application. This is not just by supporting a person's wife who he left behind without mizonot. This applies to any debtor that you repay the loan for them. Then that is considered to be Mavriach Harim Nechasav, and the person owes you no money whatsoever. Now, in the situation of our Mishnah, had the woman borrowed money, and in borrowing the money, she then got her mizonot, then when the husband comes back, he would be obligated to pay, because the woman's obligated for the debt, and then the husband's obligated to cover his wife's debt. The problem that happened here was that he didn't offer it as a loan. He offered it just as support for the woman. I guess he expected to get paid back, but he never said anything. He never stipulated that it was a loan. And that's what runs him into a problem. Now, the Rishonim line up on different sides as to when he doesn't make any declaration. If he just says, look, here, take this and support yourself, then it's clear that all he's doing is Mavriach Harim Nechasav. He didn't offer any loan, and then he loses his money, according to Hanan. If he says, I'm extending it as a loan to you, then it's clear it's a loan. Question is, in Stam case, where he doesn't say anything, he just offers the money, which way does it go? Do we assume then it's a loan, or do we assume that he's just giving her the money to utilize? The Rishonim argue about that, about in that Stam case, what's his intent when he gives the money to the woman? Is it a gift, or is it considered to be a loan in that instance? All right, so the key element here we're going to see about how to create parameters around this, when it's considered to be hana or not hana, we're based on the Gemara. Tanan Atam, the Mishnah Nidarim, and that's where the main part of this sugya is. It's in Nidarim. Hamudar hana mechaviro. Someone who is mudar hana means that the other person took a neder hana and says, I may not get hana from you. So this person is precluded from providing hana to the individual. So Reuven takes a neder and says, I don't want any hana from you, Shimon. So now Shimon's in a situation in which he may not provide any benefit to Reuven. Nevertheless, shokel et shiklo, he's allowed to pay for his machatzita shekel. Upareat chuvo, he's allowed to repay his loans. Umachzilo avederto, and he's allowed to return his aveda to him. Makom shenotlim schar tipol hana legdesh, and in a place where they get reimbursed or payment for returning the aveda, then that benefit should go to Hekdesh. So now, Bishlama shokel lo et shiklo. Why is he allowed to pay for his shekel? Mitzvah ka'ovit. He's performing a mitzvah. So in performance of the mitzvah, then you're not benefiting this individual, because instead of him performing the mitzvah, you're performing the mitzvah. But not that there's any benefit. What do you mean there's no benefit? You just saved him the machatzita shekel that he doesn't have to pay anymore. To that, which Rashi explains here, and the Gemara will say, Shim lo shakal alav, lo hifsid klum, sheish lo chalek bekorbanot. Even if he never pays his machatzita shekel, he's still deemed to have a portion in the korbanot ad tzibur. So even if someone never pays their machatzita shekel, doesn't mean they lose out in their portion of anything that deals with the tzibur. So now, you're supposed to give the machatzita shekel. He's obligated to give the machatzita shekel. But the giving of the shekel, in a sense, is a voluntary mitzvah, because even if you don't give it, you haven't lost anything. There's nothing that you gain by giving the chatziah shekel that you wouldn't have if you didn't give the chatziah shekel. Whether you pay or you don't pay, you're still part of Klal Yisrael, and you're still part of the korbanot tzibur. Now you should pay it, otherwise if everybody took that same position, right, then they'd have no machatzita shekel. The right thing to do is to pay it, but in the end, you can't claim that he was mehanehim. He didn't give him anything that he didn't have before. All he did was, in the equivalent of paying a debt or a loan that he might have been obligated to pay, but he didn't give it to him directly, because anything that surrounds that repayment of the debt would have happened whether or not he paid the money. So what Rashi is doing is bifurcating the din here and saying that there are two pieces. One piece is, I have a monetary obligation. The other piece is that I have a hana'ah that I get from giving that monetary obligation. So what Rashi says is that hana'ah I get whether or not I pay the debt. Whether or not I pay the chatzi shekel, I'm going to get that benefit. So your paying of that chatzi shekel doesn't provide me anything more than I would have had. Now, the possibility that you're saving me from having to pay the shekel, that may not be a big deal, because that is a mitzvah to pay it. It's the right thing to do to pay it. It might even be a quasi-obligation that the Beit Din can enforce, but it's still not something where you are saving him money, because even if he didn't pay it, he would have gotten all the benefits of not paying it. The Tanan, we have a Mishnah. Tomim ala avud, vala gavoy, valatid legavot. So here we have the Mishnah in Shkalim, which tells us that you take off ala avud. Avud is what is lost. Now Rashi explains it, and we'll see that Tosafot and many of the other Rishonim disagree with Rashi. Rashi says avud, af al mi shishalach shiklo v'avad. Someone sent in their shekel and got lost on the way. Still, when they're toreim the shkalim, to break the lishka, if it's lost, you still get a portion in the shumat alishka, in the machatzita shekel, in the korbanot tzibur. Vela gavoy, shadayin lo yigia lekan. It's on its way, but it hasn't gotten there. And still, when they're toreim the lishka, you still count it as part of the tzibur. Vela tzid legavot. Vafil lo nigvel achar mikain. So Rashi says something that in the future, he planned on giving it a machatzita shekel. So therefore, he's still part of the korbanot tzibur, even if he never ever pays for it. So this is the idea that we expressed before, that even without payment of the machatzita shekel, you still gain the rights of someone who does pay the machatzita shekel, and you consider to be a part of it. So paying of it is the right thing to do. It's a mitzvah to do. But even without that payment, you get all the benefits that would have been rendered by paying it. So therefore, when this individual steps in for you, no big deal. Now, Rashi is interesting only because if he just wrote Alatid the Gavot, you would have known the other ones as well. Which is that it's so obvious that if you never give it, or something you would have given in the future, if you're counted, then certainly in the case of Avud, or in the case of Gavoy, you're counted. Why should it be any different? That's where Tosafot says that he doesn't understand Rashi's explanation, and therefore he brings in an alternative view over here, which is Elanir Lefresh ala Avud. What does it mean, lost? Shibaliyat Gabai Vavad. It came to the Gabai, and then he lost it. So it got to the treasurer, it got to the Mikdash, and then it was lost. Vela Gavoy Biyada Shaliach, Vinevad Biyada Shaliach, Lachar Shinitrama Hachuma. The case of Gavoy is a case where you gave it to a Shliach to bring up to the Mikdash. They took off the Chumat Alishka, and then the Shliach lost it. And that time also, you're counted as if it's there, and nobody has to repay it. Because if it was lost before they took off the Chumat Alishka, then you're responsible to get it there again. And you would have to repay it. Valati the Gavot, Sheavoli de Givui b'Basof. In the end, he will come to pay it, or he will have to pay it. And therefore, over here, V'had Amar, Hacha Shokel lo et Shiklo. So what's the case where he's paying for a shekel? Ba'avud v'gavoy. It's a case where it got lost, or he already paid for it. D'lo mechayve ba'alim ba'achrayut. In that case, the ba'alim are not obligated to pay it back. So in the case where he sent it to the Shumat Alishka and they lost it after it got there, or in a case where he sent it with a shliach and the shliach lost it after they took off Shuma, he doesn't have to replace the coin. But it's a mitzvah to do it, to give the money because it didn't get there, it's not there, there's still a mitzvah to do it. If you this individual steps in and pays for it, then mitzvah ka'avid, and there is no repayment, there is no hana'ah that he's providing for him because he is counted anyway. But Atid Gavot, where he says in the future you're going to collect it, there you are providing hana'ah. This goes back to your question, Echiel. Is this just a mitzvah or it's an obligation? Tosafot says you can be a mashkein. But Beitin comes, takes a mashkon, can force you to pay for machazit shekel. If you pay in that case, you actually are doing something for him. You are being mehanehim. So the case that Tosafot says that we're talking about is a case where the shekel, chatzit shekel got lost after a time period in which you would not be obligated to replace it. The right thing, the mitzvah, is to replace it. But since you already discharged your obligation, you're not obligated to pay it. In that instance, if the guy steps up and pays for it, that is okay because it's mitzvah kovid and no obligation. So you see Tosfot breaking away from Rashi in two levels. One is he explains the Mishnah and Shkalim differently, which is Avud and Gavoy and Atid Gavot. In all those cases, he explains them differently because it says Rashi's explanation, you have to replace the Mechatzit Shekel. You're not patur in those cases. That's number one. Number two is he says that the case, the Mishnah in Nedarim is not talking about a case where he just pays it for him. It's got to be a case where the guy already paid it and it got lost and now he doesn't have to replace it. And because of that, it's mitzvah ka'ovid and not an obligation. So that's what differs from Rashi in both of those. The Ritva also has a different explanation of Avud, Gavoy, and Atid Gavot to make it that it's in order. There's a hierarchy involved in it. Some lawyer along the lines of what Tosafot says over here. The next case is Avedato. Why can he return his Aveda? Aveda Tonami, mitzvah kovid. Why can he return his Aveda? Because he's doing a mitzvah. Doing a mitzvah, he can't say to him, you're giving me hana. He says, I'm not giving you hana. I'm doing what the Torah told me to do. The Torah told me to return your Aveda. That's what I'm doing. This is not a personal benefit to you. I would do this for anybody. And I'm obligated to do it for anybody because the Torah says that. Just because it's a mitzvah doesn't make it that it's mutar to do. Because you can't hand staka, you can't hand money to this individual. Ella, it's got to be a mitzvah which involves no direct payment to the individual. Or in a sense, he's not giving him something that belongs to him. In Hashavat Aveda, he's giving the object that belonged to this individual back to him. So that's why you can say mitzvah kovid. But in a case where he's giving him money directly out of pocket, then he's doing a mitzvah, but that mitzvah still involves giving something of his to this other individual. Now, the interesting part about makom shenotlim schar, why shouldn't he be able to get the money or the reimbursement? If that's a takana, first of all, the party over here that is getting hana'a is Shimon. Reuven said, I don't want to get any benefit from Shimon. But here where there's schar, where he makes a payment for the return of the Aveda, it's Reuven paying Shimon. Shimon's the beneficiary. Shimon's allowed to get benefit from Uvein. There was no Neder Hana'ah. Rashi brings here from the Gemara in Nidarim, which is that they're both Mudrei Hana'ah from each other. It's a case where they both took Nidrei Hana'ah each from each other, and therefore neither of them can get Hana'ah from each other, and that's why he can't get paid the Schar. In that case as well, it might be that that may not be a problem either. Because if he has to reimburse him, the reimbursement is because of his Schar Batalah. It's the fact that he didn't do work. And it's not really payment for the return of the Avedah. It's reimbursement for losses that he incurred because the fact that he went to return his Avedah instead of going to work. So that reimbursement is not really Hana'ah that he's providing him. He's just replacing a loss that he incurred in order to return the Avedah. So that might not even be deemed to be Hana'ah. And that answer, even though it might be an okay answer, the Gemara Nedarim challenges that answer from this perspective, that it's only Schar Batalah, and it's not really Hana'ah that he's providing him. And so therefore, what you have to say here is that something along the lines of what the Rosh says, that Hana'ah is okay as long as there's nothing that gets to the other individual. Once a physical object or something is given to the other individual, that's already considered to be Hana'ah, that we will not allow to happen. So handing money to the individual versus repaying the loan to a third party is very different. If you repay the loan to a third party, that's one thing because that's totally outside of the realm of the individual who is Mudar Hana'ah. But in a case where you hand the cash directly to the individual, even though it's a reimbursement for incurred losses, that's already deemed to be Hana'ah because you're interacting directly with the individual and giving them the cash itself. So that's a problem. You always have to interact with a third party, number one. And number two is nothing physical has to end up with this individual. Those are some of the parameters that the Rishonim lay out in terms of what's considered Mavriach Harim Nechasav and not considered to be Hana'ah versus things that are considered to be Hana'ah. Now, again, even though there may not be any Hana'ah over here because it is Sechar Batalah, so what you have to suggest maybe is that this payment is like the equivalent of a reward for returning the Avedah. And since it's not reimbursement for Sechar Batalah, but rather a reward of sorts, then that is Hana'ah, because that's in excess of what he should have received. And therefore he's being Mahanez friend. And if he doesn't take the payment, then he's also being Mahanez friend who doesn't have to make the reward payment, which was a takana or some sort of social contract where people acted in this way when an Aveda was returned to them. And so now both parties are caught. If he pays the money, then he's Mahanez friend. If the other guy is Mochel on the payment, then he's Mahanez the other side. So therefore it's Tipola Hekdesh because we're stuck in a position where neither party can grant either Mechila or payment to the other party. But now, the last problem is, Uporea lo et chovo, when you pay for his debts, ha kamishtar shile, you're giving him hana'ah. There's no better hana'ah than someone covering all of your debts, all of your loans. I'm Rav Hoshaya, ha mani. So Rav Hoshaya comes along and says, you know who the author of this Mishnah is in Nidarim? Chanani. This is Chanan Damar, ibeid et ma'utav. Chanan the Shitato, who says that, by the case of the Isha, that when he put his money out there, he lost his money. So to over here, when you repay the loan and you weren't asked to do it, you lost your money. And he's the author of this Mishnah. Rashi says over here about Hanan's position, which is important, that Hanan says, Ibeid ma'utav. The guy lost his money. Because kevin ilu parei l'shem halva'ah, lav halva'ahi. Even if the individual stepped in and made the payment on his behalf, saying that I'll lend him the money and I'm going to do this, it's not considered to be a loan and he cannot demand repayment. Then even if he pays it without expectation of repayment, that's also not considered to be as if you give him something. So that's an important thing that Rashi says over here with regards to Hanan Shita and why it works over here. Had the person come in and said, you know what, I'm going to repay the creditor on behalf of this debtor, but I'm going to lend the money to this debtor. I'm going to lend the money, I'm going to repay it to him. If he comes to court afterwards to collect the money, he has no rights. Because he never had the agreement of the debtor to do this. He did it of his own volition. He put the money there. And Hanan says, just because you called it a loan doesn't mean that the debtor is now obligated to you. Because of that, that means that whatever money you put there, you have no rights to collect back. That means that if you did it with the intent of never being repaid, you were going to be mochel on it. You also did nothing. Because even if you did it as a loan, you would have gotten nothing. So even when you do it as a favor, as a gift, you've done nothing as well. Because you can never obligate the other individual. Now, if you did it in concert with him, or he asked you to do it, then already we're dealing with something else, because then you're actually benefiting him You're doing something that he will be obligated to repay in the future, and you are now stopping the creditor or extending the terms of the debt. So because of that, that we would not say in that case that you're not giving mana. But when you act on your own, and you don't have the permission of the debtor, you have no rights, and since you have no rights, no matter how you do it, there's no hana provided to the other individual. Rav Amar Afilu Teima Rabbonon, even the Rabbonon would agree in this case. Hacha b'mayaskina, and what's the case here? Shalava almanat shaloli frela. He took out a loan with the agreement that he wouldn't have to repay it. Now, obviously, if he takes a loan that's not repaid, that's a matana, that's a gift. And then what's the question here? So most explain, Rashi does that over here and says, there was no set time for repayment. There was no deadline for repayment. So it's an outstanding loan, but with no termination to the debt. So here it can be a loan forever. So if that's the case, he's never under an obligation to repay it. He can go through his whole life and never repay it because that was the terms of the deal. And since there is no repayment date, then there's no obligation on him to repay it. If you go in and step in and repay him, you didn't save him anything. Because in the end, he didn't have to repay it until some point, maybe till no point, because this is an endless loan. So that's how Rashi explains it. Others still explain it in a case where it was a loan that he wasn't obligated to repay, and we'll see why that might still be a problem. So, Bishlamo Rava, Lo Amar Kerev Oshaya. Okay, Rava didn't say like Oshaya, to Mukim Laki Rabbonon, because he sets it up like the Rabbonon, and he'd much rather have it be L'divri Ako, or according to the Rabbonon, rather than just like Hanan. Ella Rav Oshaya, my time Lo Amar Kerev. Why didn't Rav Oshaya explain this L'divri Ako instead of just like Hanan, and explain like Rava? Amar Lecha Rav Oshaya, Nihi Dehana Lele. Even though he didn't get hana'a, kisufa mi lele. Doesn't he save him from embarrassment? The fact that there's this outstanding loan that he's never repaid, even though there's no deadline or no date of repayment, nevertheless, every time he sees the malveh, he's embarrassed about the fact that he has this loan outstanding and he still hasn't repaid it. So when this guy steps in and repays it for him, there is hana'a over here. There is the hana'a of the relief from that embarrassment. So therefore, he wasn't willing to explain it like the Chachamim, because according to that, there is a benefit over here, the benefit of kisufa. And that's why some people explain it here. It's even with a loan, that shomanat lifra means here's a loan, but you don't have to repay it at all. Why? Because there's even more embarrassment. The fact that he gave him money, and he's like giving him money, says you don't have to repay it, because that makes it seem like he doesn't have the ability to repay it. It makes him even more embarrassed that he has to take it as a gift instead of as a loan. And therefore, when he repays it, he's actually preventing that kisufa, that embarrassment that he has. So based on that, we would say the same thing. Here in the Girsa, it's very difficult. The Gemara here says, Hatam nami idle hanab ayina de michsef mine. Also over there, there is hanab because he removes that embarrassment from here. The hatam over there doesn't make any sense. The Gemara explained what the issue is. The hatam doesn't add anything. So here, this lashon of hatam idle hanab bayanad michsef seems extraneous. And the goat, Mironchenberg, actually says, l'chora lishni teiru. And it shows that the Ran and the Darim, Rashi over here, both don't include it in their Girsa. But then he says he saw in the Marshal that he actually had a different set of explanation in the Gemara, that here there are actually two answers of the Gemara. The first answer of the Gemara says he saves him from embarrassment, but that's not deemed to be real Hana. And then the second Mishna over here says that embarrassment is deemed to be real Hana. And since it's deemed to be real Hana, therefore he's in violation of his Neder in that case. And that's why Oshaya does not take up Rava's position and say that this Mishnah is authored by the Rabbanan as well, because the Rabbanan would not accept this. There is Hana'a here, and since there is Hana'a, it would be illegal for him to provide this Hana'a based on his Neder, and that's why he says it's got to be Hanan's position and not the position of the Chachamim over here. So here you have a machloket between Hanan and the Chachamim, and therefore Rav Oshaya sets it up like Hanan, because he's unwilling to accept the fact that this protection or this hana'a that he's granting him is considered to be nothing, because he is saving him from this embarrassment. And that embarrassment is something that is real. And since it's real, it's a hana'a that he's providing him, and he may not do such a thing. Now, again, you could argue here that the individual would have said, even in the case of kisufa, that might be the first answer of the Marshal. The guy could claim, listen, I would have paid him some money to extend the date of the loan, I would have placated him somehow else. Therefore, you're not really providing me hana, even from the embarrassment. I could have placated him without actually paying back the loan. The fact that you paid back the loan maybe didn't really save me from the embarrassment, because I could have handled it a different way. The fact that you did this is not a hana. So that might be the other side of what the Marshal says, that this hana is not a real hana. All right, so next Mishnah. Admon Omer Shiva. We said at the beginning of the Perek that we had Admon and Hanan. Now we had the three instances of Hanan. Now we have the seven instances in where Admon comes up. Admon Omer Shiva. Misha Meit Veniach Banim Ubanot. Someone who passed away and left boys and girls in the estate. Zmancha Nechasim Mirubim. In the case where there are plenty of assets in the estate, Habanim Yorshim. The Banim become the owners of the estate. They are the ones midoraita are supposed to inherit here. But banot is a note, and the daughters get sustained out of the estate. Ubenechasim muatim. If there are not sufficient assets in the estate, habanot yizonu, vabanim yachzeru al ptachim. The daughters get sustained out of the assets of the estate, and the children got to go knock on doors and collect money in order to sustain themselves. Now, what is the amount that is considered to be mirubim or nechasim muatim? Rashi over here quotes Rav's sheet up on the Gemara in Baba Batra, which is that you have sufficient funds to support them for 12 months. That's considered to be Nechasim Mirubim. Less than that is not. Turns out that the Gemara in Baba Batra has other opinions, and the Loch is not like Rav. Rashi brings that explanation, I assume because it's the easiest or the most straightforward of explanations, but that doesn't mean necessarily that's the only explanation of what Mirubim or Muatim are over here. Admon Omer, B'shvil Shani Zachar Hefsareti, just because I'm a male, I lose out? Amar Rabban Gamliel, Roe Ani et Divrei Admon. What Admon says over here makes a lot of sense. So Gemara says, my kamar. What is Admon saying over here? Amar Abai, Hochi kamar. B'shvil shani zachar, v'ro'oi lasok b'torah hefsadati? Just because I'm a male and I have the ability to be osek in Torah, now I lost out? The case here, the daughters supersede my claim on the estate, or my Yerusha in the estate, just because of my Zachar. Now, the answer that the Gemara is going to give, it seems very obvious, which is in a second, the Gemara is going to say what it is. Why the Gemara did not go to this at first is, maybe because of the Lashon of Zachar. Usually when the Gemara talks about, and you can see that in the beginning of the Mishnah, which is that you have Banim and Banot. So, what Admon should have said is, Admon Omer Bishvil Shani Ben Hifsadeti. Just because I was a Ben, I lost out. Why is he using a Lashon Zachar? And that's why the Gemara over here is looking for something that's unique to a Zachar, or a person being a Zachar, rather than simply a Ben, which will be the answer that Rava gives in the end. So my Kamar, Gemara says, what is he saying over here? Amar Abaye, Hachi Kamar, B'shvil Shani Zachar, V'ra'ui Lasok B'Torah, Hifsadeti? Just because I'm a male, and I have the ability to be osek, or I have an obligation to be osek in Torah, I lose out. And we've seen such a distinction earlier in the Masechta, whether there's a mitzvah or a chovah, an obligation on the parents to support the children in that case. There we saw three different opinions, and some of the distinctions ran along the lines of whether the banim have more of a mitzvah or more of a chovah because of the fact that they're obligated in learning Torah. So then, that might be over here, though, what Admon's asking. If, just because I'm a male, and I have this obligation in Limud HaTorah, all of a sudden I'm penalized, and now I have to go around and collect from door to door, instead of gaining from the assets of the estate. How can you say that that's Admon's question? Admon's question is a question without any qualifications. The Mishnah is talking about Yerusha over here. So you're telling me that only male children who learn Torah inherit? Male children that don't learn Torah don't inherit? The Torah is talking about a case of inheritance. Inheritance goes to the child whether they are or not learning Torah. And if that's the case, then why should that be the claim of Admon over here? Why should Admon be making a claim about Isuk b'Torah if that's not the differentiating factor that allows them to inherit? What allows them to inherit here is that they're males, not because they're Osek b'Torah. Now the truth is, and as Tosfos points out, we did make such a distinction earlier in the Masechta with regards to the obligations, that it's a mitzvah lazon et banot, kal v'chomer lebanim or osik b'torah. So we do see such a thing or such a factor early on in the Masechta. The Rabbeinu Tam says that these cases are not comparable. Because over there it's talking about during the lifetime of the father, the obligation or the mitzvah for him to support his children. Over here we're talking about after the death of the father, but we're talking about Yerusha Deoraita. We're talking about Yerusha Deoraita, why should the issue of Torah come up? When you're talking about a mitzvah, then you can make such a distinction. You can say that the Limud HaTorah has impact. But over here, when we're talking about Yerusha Deoraita, Limud HaTorah shouldn't be a factor at all. So therefore, Ella Amarova Hachigamar B'shvil Shani Zachar V'ra'oi L'Reish B'Nechasim. Since I'm a male and I have entitlement, I'm the one who's supposed to inherit. V'ra'oi L'Reish B'Nechasim Rubim. And I have the right to inherit, meaning that when there are sufficient assets in the estate, I will be the inheritor of the estate. Therefore, I lost out here when there are fewer assets. He says, I have a claim, midoraita. Now, obviously, what Admon is not saying is that the banim should inherit over here, and then the girls should have to go around to the tachim, because we understand what the takana is. But rather, Admon's question is, why aren't the boys on par with the girls? He says, look, if the case where there's sufficient assets, the zachar inherits everything, then in a case where the nechasim mu'atim, I know that we want to enfranchise the girls and have them take something, but why should that be completely at my expense? If I have a right to inherit, so fine, let the girls in, but let them in pari passu, on the same level as me. Why should they be given rights that exceed my rights and subordinate my claims here? I'm the one who's supposed to be yoreish over here, and now meantime, you are disenfranchising me from the inheritance completely and saying the girls get everything, and we go around and collect door to door. Why don't we say, okay, fine, I understand you want to protect the girls, but at least make us equal so that we'll all share in whatever's there until it runs out, and then we'll all go around and knock on the doors. And that's the question about Moan, according to Rava. Now, Tosafot over here points out something that is interesting, which is that the Gemara is going to say in a little bit that any time that Rabban Gamliel says Roe Ani Adivrei Admon, the loch is like Admon. So in our Mishnah, that would be the case. Rabban Gamliel over here says that he thinks that Admon is correct over here. Nevertheless, we know, and Rabbeinu Tam says, the loch is not like Admon in this Mishnah. The loch is actually like the Tanakama. So why should the loch be like the Tanakama if Rabban Gamliel upholds the position of Admon in this instance? So what the Rabbeinu Tam says in the end, Rabbeinu Ratenu, the Hainu time of Admon. Lavla fluge amiltu de chachamim ato. Admon over here is not coming to argue on the Tanakama. Ela mitama ba'almo. He's just querying. He's asking a question. He's saying, I don't understand this. He's not coming to say, I think it's wrong. He's just saying, based on what it is, I want to understand this better. And this seems to be questionable logic based on what I'm saying. But he's not coming to argue on the Tanakama. And you would have to say the same thing for Rabban Gamliel over here, which is even harder, which is saying that Rabban Gamliel says, I see the position of Admon. But Admon's not taking a position over here. So Tosafot says also, Rabban Gamliel is saying, I see the question that Admon is posing on the logic over here. Not that he's coming to argue, but both Admon and Rabban Gamliel are just saying that there is a good question on this logic, but we do accept the position of the Tanakama, and that's why we do Paskin like the Tanakama, because Admon himself doesn't argue on the Tanakama. In the end, he agrees to the Tanakama, and so does Rabban Gamliel. They're just questioning the logic behind it, but not arguing on that position. Right, so the next Mishnah says, person who makes a claim against his friend for barrels or pitchers of oil. In the end, he agrees that he owes him the pitchers, but he doesn't owe him the oil. Admon Omer, ho v'odeh b'miksa datana. Since this is deemed to be modeh b'miksa, tishava. He has to take a shvua. So modeh b'miksa takes a shvua. Kofir bakol doesn't take a shvua. Also, the rule is that you modeh b'miksa is that the person makes a claim, and then you admit to a portion of the claim. If you admit to something that has nothing to do with the claim, that's not called modeh b'miksa, that you admitted to a portion of the claim. So over here, Admon claims that when you say kadesh shemen, that the incorporated in kadesh shemen are two aspects. There's the oil and that which the oil isn't contained in. So then when the guy admits to the kankanim, then it is a mode of miksat. He is addressing the claim. Chamim, ein hodat miksat miminatana. The hodah here has nothing to do with the claim. The claim is for oil and he's talking about pitchers. Pitchers and oil are not the same thing. Amar Rabban Gamliel, Roe Ani et Divrei Admon. I think that Admon is correct in this instant. So Shmamina, the Rabbanan. According to the Rabbanan of our Mishnah, Ta'ano Chitim V'Sorim, V'Hode V'Sorim Patur. that if the individual comes along and makes a claim for wheat and barley, he says, you owe me wheat, you owe me barley. He says, I owe you the barley, I don't owe you the wheat. Patur. He's considered to be patur because he actually has two claims here. It's a claim on wheat, a claim on barley. As far as the barley is concerned, he admitted to everything. As far as the wheat is concerned, he was kofir bakol. So there is no modeh b'mikseh over here. As opposed to Admon, who would view this as a single claim, a claim of wheat and barley, and he admitted to a portion of that claim, which is barley. Lema davyutiyufta derav Nachman amar Shmuel. This would be a strong refutation of the position of Rav Nachman amar Shmuel. Amar Rav Nachman amar Shmuel, ta'ano chitim v'sorim, v'od olo be'achad me'en chayav. If there was a claim for wheat and barley, and he admitted to one of those two, he's chayav as if it is modeh b'mikseh. Now, Tosafot asks a very strong question over here, which is, why does Rav Nachman and Shmuel have to have any problem over here? Rav Nachman and Shmuel could just say, I hold like Admon. Are you right? I don't fit into the position of the Chachamim. I hold like Admon. And guess what? The Halacha is like Admon. So why do I have any problem over here? Rav Nachman and Shmuel could have answered that. Why is the Gemara so intent on making sure that Rav Nachman and Shmuel conforms to the position of the Chachamim? V'omer Rabbi, demekulu parich. Demashma Admon modeh b'chitim misorim demiftar. Mitalo gakat chitim misorim elanakat kadeh shemen. So Tosafot suggests over here that even Admon would agree, in this case of chitim and sorim, based on the deal from the Mishnah, that that would not be classified as modeh b'mikseh. Because if that would have been classified as modeh b'mikseh, that's the example that Admon should have brought down in the Mishnah. The fact that he brought kadeh shemen as the example where they're considered to be a single entity, because the oil needs to be held in something, and therefore the Kadim are like the equivalent, as the Gemara is going to say in a second, a Rimon beklipato. It's the equivalent of pomegranates in their casing. So in that case, it's one entity, and that's why it's deemed to be modeh b'mikseh. Over here, by Chitim and Sorim, even Admon would agree that there are distinct items, and therefore there's no modeh b'mikseh. So what Tosafot suggests is the Gemara thinks at this point, even Admon would agree that Chitim and Sorim are considered to be two entities and would not be classified as modeh b'mikseh, because otherwise he should have brought that as the example in the Mishnah. Because the example in the Mishnah is a little tighter in terms of their unit of kadeh shemen and shemen versus chitim and sorim, which have nothing to do with each other. So I'm Rabbi Amrav, bitoano mida. The case over here is where he's asking him for a certain measurement, which is not that he's asking him for kadim and shemen. He's not saying to me, look, I'm asking you for barrels or pitchers full of oil. He's saying to him, you owe me kadeh shemen. You owe me this much oil. How much oil? Kadim. Kadim worth. And he says, you owe me 10 kadim worth of oil. Not as that he's asking for the kadim. He's telling him how much oil he owes him. That's the case in our Mishnah. That once you do that, there's no deal from the Rabbanan's position as to the din by chitim and sorim. But then you have a problem. Yachi, my time at the Admon. Over there, then what's the reason of Admon? If he's just asking him for oil, then why, when he admits to kankanim, does it have any modeh b'mikseh? Admon's position makes no sense now. Elo amarovo, dekuliyama, everybody agrees, heichid amarle, melo, asara kadeh shemen, that if he says 10 pitchers full of oil, yeshli beborcha, I have in your press, shemen katayinle, kankanim lo katayinle. He's asking him for oil, he's not asking him for barrels or pitchers, he's simply asking him for that amount of oil, not for the barrels or the pitchers themselves. Asara kadeh shemen mleim, yishli etzlecha, I have 10 pitchers or barrels full of oil with you, shemen v'kakanim katayin. There he's clearly asking him for both the oil and the utensil. Ki plege, where is the machlok between the chachamim and Admon? Heichid amar lei, asara kadeh shemen, yishli etzlecha. But he just says it, asara kadeh shemen. So when he says 10 pitchers or barrels of oil, yeshli etzlecha, that I have by you, then the question of what that language means. In the first case, he said, melo asara kadeh shemen. There's clearly talking about what's inside of them. In the case where he says, I have 10 barrels full of oil, it's clear that he's talking about the barrels and the oil. The question here is where he didn't use that extraneous language, where he didn't say melo, or he didn't say mleim. He just said, asara kadeh shemen, what does that mean? So Admon omer, yesh v'lashon hazeh lashon kankanim. Admon says that means both the oil and the pitchers as well. Rabbanan savre, eim v'lashon hazeh lashon kankanim. This does not include the pitchers, only includes the oil. Ella, taima de eim v'lashon hazeh lashon kankanim. That means that the Chachamim, in theory, agree with Admon. It's just that over here, they don't think that the language actually means kankanim. Habiyesh v'lashon zeh kankanim. If the language does include kankanim, chayav, he would have been chayav. Meaning that, in the case of chitim and tzorim, the Chachamim would agree to Admon's position that it's considered to be modeh b'miksat. So, leimatav tiyufta d'Rav Chiya Bar. So that is to say, this would be a strong refutation of the position of Rav Chiya Bar Abba. Tamar Rav Chiya Bar Abba, tano chitim es orim, odolo be'achad mehen. If they make a claim for chitim and sorim, and then he admits to one of them, patur! There is no modeh b'miksat. We look at them as two distinct claims, and not as a singular claim. So therefore, now our Mishnah, the diagat of the Mishnah, will be just the opposite. Before, the diagat of the Mishnah was a problem for Rav Nachman and Amar Shmuel. Now that we switched the way that we're looking at the Mishnah, the diuk of the Mishnah is actually a problem for Rav Chiya Bar Abba, who has the opposite opinion of Rav Nachman and Amar Shmuel. So Amar Rav Shimi Barashi, Nasek Mishutano Rimon Beklipato. It's as if it's a case where he's asking a person for a pomegranate in its shell, a pomegranate in its place. So that's, again, what we said before. Tosfot said the Havamina, the reason that the Gemara thought that even Admon disagreed with Rav Nachman and Amar Shmuel is because of this. Here, the Gemara makes a distinction here between items that are clearly distinct and items that are inherently connected. A pomegranate is usually found, or pomegranates are usually found inside of their shell. Wheat and barley aren't necessarily found together. So therefore, you can differentiate between claims that involve items that are a unit versus items that are clearly distinct, but you put them together as a unit. So here you could claim the same thing by Kadei Shemen. By Kadei Shemen, you could say that that's a singular unit because you have to keep the oil in something. So therefore, the Kadim and the Shemen are like the equivalent of a Rimon Beklipato. And there, even Rabbi Chiya Bar Abba agrees that that's a single claim, and if you were Modeh B'Miksat, you'd be Chayav. But in a case where they're completely distinct items, then the Chachamim and maybe even Admon would not agree and say that that's deemed to be Modeh B'Miksat. Matkifla Ravina. Rimon below klipato, lo mintar. Pomegranates without their shell do not stay. They are not protected. Shemen mintar below kankanim. You can't have oil without pitchers or barrels. Now the truth is you do have to hold the oil in something, but the answer will be what they call the bore that we saw before, which is at the bottom of the press. After you have the oil press, there's a bore where it collects. You can leave the oil in that collection pit. You don't have to put it into barrels or into pitchers. And therefore, there is a way to store oil without them being in the kankanim. They are not inherently connected. They are not inseparable. By the pomegranate and the shell, they're inseparable because otherwise the pomegranate itself will get ruined if it's not kept inside the shell. Oil can be kept in the bore without getting ruined. And therefore, it's not essential that it has the kankanim. So how can you compare those two cases? Elohacha b'mayaskinu. So now the Gemara rereads the Mishnah again. Damarle asara kadei shemen yeshli etzlecha. He used this language of asara kadei shemen yeshli etzlecha. Amarle idach shemen lo hayu dvarim meolam. The shemen part never happened. Kankanim, by kankanim, nami chamisha itlecha v'chamisha letlecha. Five of them I agree to, the other five I don't agree to. Admon omer yesh v'lazon asher lashon kankanim. So in this lashon of kadei shemen, kankanim are included. And therefore, umigo de mishtaba kankanim, mishtaba name yashemen, ayide gilgul. And since he's going to take a shvua for the modeh b'miksat by the kankanim, he will also be megalgel a shvua to him for the oil as well, even though he's a kofer bakol over there. Since he already has to do modeh b'miksat by the kankanim, just for the kankanim, then he also has to deal with the case of the shemen, even though he's a kofer bakol over there, because once we have him taking a shvua, we may as well get everything in. Now then, rabbanan sabreim b'lashon azel lashon kankanim, this language does not include kankanim. Mashatano lo hodulo. Whatever he claimed, he's not admitting to. Mashodulo lo tano. And whatever he's admitting to was not claimed against him. Therefore, we don't even get off the ground. When he says five kankanim instead of 10 kankanim, the guy never asked him for kankanim. So there's no modeh b'miksat there. If there's no modeh b'miksat, there's no shvua. If there's no shvua, then regarding the shemen, he's a kofer bakol. There's no shvua there as well. But now what the Gemara did was created this as a case of argument about the language, as to whether the language includes kankanim, but it makes no statement about the case of chitim and sorim. Because the modeh b'miksat in this case is all about the kankanim. It's not kankanim versus oil. It's not kankanim versus this language. It's two separate issues. There's the shemen, and there's the kankanim. And when he admits by the kankanim, he's a modeh b'miksat in the kankanim themselves. So the same thing would be true by Chitim and Sorim. By Chitim and Sorim, if he came and made a claim of Chitim and Sorim, and he admitted to the Sorim and not the Chitim, that wouldn't be deemed Modir Miksa. That means he agrees to one fully, and he disagrees with one fully, there's no Shavua. On the other hand, if he said, okay, you know what, by the Sorim, I owe you half as much as you said, by the Chitim, I owe you nothing. Then he'd be Chayv a Shavua just for the Sorim. Because the Sorim are distinct, and he's Modir Miksa in that distinct item. Once we have him taking a Shavua for that, we'll make him take a Shavua on the Chitim, through a Gilgul Shavua, we'll make him take a Shavua. So that's why now we can explain Rav Chir Ba'ava, Tanu Chitim V'Sarim V'Odulo V'Echad Me'em Patur. That's why you can say Patur over there, because that's a case where they have nothing to do with each other. And his admission is about one item entirely, and his agreement is about one item entirely. There's no modem mix up there at all. And our Mishnah would agree with that. Because in our Mishnah, it's a question about the language. Does the language include pitchers and oil? But that's not enough. Even if he included pitchers and oils, and he agreed he owed him 10 pitchers and no oil, he wouldn't have to take a Shavua. The only thing he takes a Shavua is if within one of those items he's Modir B'Miksat, then that draws a Shavua for that item, and then we roll it over to the other item. And because of that now, Admon and the Chachamim can fit into Rabbi Chiya Barabbas Shita if you explain the case in that matter. Okay, we'll stop here by the Mishnah on the bottom of Kuvchet Amud Bet.